Book of the Week, Cold Blood by Richard Kerridge, looks back on the author's childhood in the 1960s, when the hobby of collecting wild animals was still considered acceptable, if a little unusual. The author and his friends had established a small collection of reptiles, but there were two additions that they dreamed of making, two prized but very different animals which had a powerful hold on their youthful imaginations. The reader is Robert Powell.
The great crested newt was the rarest British newt. They were black as fresh tar and had deep, jagged crests. Their bellies were brilliant orange with big blotches. Old books from the library called them the warty newt, for their skins were a surface of pimples like black caviar. Their golden eyes gleamed. Sometimes when we searched in a pond, I thought I glimpsed one out in the middle in the ravines of weed, but I could never be sure. Triturus cristatus, the great crested newt, has a different place now in our culture. It is perhaps the most famously protected of our rare species. Developers dread it, since the presence of these newts mandates relocation and the provision of an alternative habitat before building can take place. In York in 2014, building work on a new John Lewis store was held up for 3 months, because great cresteds were found on the site in unexpected numbers. All the newts had by law to be captured by handlers, licensed by Natural England, and released in a new wetland nearby, constructed at a cost of £300,000. 3 years ago I saw the dance of the great crested newts. I'm glad that I did not know then that watching by torchlight might not be allowed, being counted by some as a disturbance and thus illegal. It was after dark. Spots of rain pricked my cheeks. My beam on the weed found a toad, a loose bag of a body, now emptied of spawn. Small newts hung in the water. There was a white shape over there, a carrier bag billowing, and next to it, a male great-crested in full display, arching his back. He twisted and corkscrewed, flashing his belly, yolk yellow, blotched with black. Where was he looking? At the edge of my circle of light was the female, flat-backed, spongy. She walked towards him. He made a little leap to land in front of her, jagged crest quivering. Large and deliberate, she pushed past. He swam alongside. She pushed on. He launched himself to get ahead of her, turned, put his nose to hers, and let tail and body lift until he was dancing vertically, nose down, a writhing coil of black and yellow. She was still. His eyes were mad like a bull's. The female moved on. For most of the year they live out of the water and tighten into drab, slow, rubbery lumps. Dust sticks to their bodies. The crests have gone. But in spring, in the ponds, those bodies soften and open out, like paper flowers in water, or sea anemones when the tide returns. The males begin to dance, their crests flaming. What does it feel like, that loosening and frenzy? What do the females see when this mad, bright creature coils, twisting in front of them? I switched off my torch. Houses were all around. Did people here know about these newts? Did they throng the bank when the season started, crisscrossing the pond with their torch beams, whispering, pointing? Why didn't they? There was one reptile that would impress everyone who heard about it. When we thought of adders, the other creatures in our zoo seemed weak and flustered, the little biscuit-coloured lizards and soft, gaping frogs. They were low status. An adder was deadly cool. At that time, our assumption was that the bite could kill you, and we were not quite wrong, though death from adder bites is extremely rare. There have been none recorded in Britain for 30 years, though about 90 people a year are bitten, usually when they inadvertently touch the snake or attempt to handle it. I was bitten myself once, I think. Deep in daydream, I was walking across a heath wearing trainers, assuming that snakes would flee from my approach, since it was so difficult to see them when I was trying to do so. Plunging my foot down into the heather, I felt a sensation like a hot needle going slowly into one of my toes. Adder didn't even occur to me then. Ow! What a nasty thorn, I thought. So that night, I was unprepared for what I saw when I removed my sock. The toe had turned almost entirely black, a characteristic symptom of adder bite. But there was no swelling or continuing soreness, and the blackness quickly faded. It was probably an adder, but I cannot be sure. How would we catch one? An adder, picked up by the tip of the tail, would not be able to bring its head up to bite, Phil announced. This he had discovered in an old book, written, it said, for boys who loved adventure. But don't pick up baby adders, the book warned, for these were capable of curling up to bite you and were full of poison. For adult vipers, the method was safe and better than grabbing behind the head, because a snake held at the neck might edge its head sideways and put a fang into your finger. We nodded wisely. When we next met, Adrian produced an old biker's glove, a thick leather gauntlet that surely the fangs would not pierce. But we only had the one. In our largest zinc bath, we planted tussocks and arranged logs. We stretched net curtain and wire netting in a wooden frame with foam rubber glued to the underside. The adder would be our zoo's tiger. It mustn't escape. Then, on a hot May morning, we set out, cycling through the suburbs, aiming for the heaths of Ashdown Forest. It was 1968. I was 13. And then, just yards from the road, everything went still. I was poised above an adder, which looked up at me, its tail tip wriggling like a worm. The furious little face was oily black. White scales like tiny pearls lined the top of the mouth. Adders have faces intense with hatred, hot with it. The eyes were like blood blisters. What had caught my eye in the heather was the zigzag, a pattern too clear to look natural. When the snake moves, winding through stalks and shadows, the zigzag goes in different directions, confusing the eye. On a motionless snake, it is insolently clear. Here's one. I kept my voice low. Adrian threw the glove, which fell short in deep heather. I didn't dare move.
Grab the tail.
I'll try. I dropped to my knees and forward onto my hands. The moss was spongy. My thumb felt a thorn. Inching until my head was almost over the adder, I raised my right hand. Something touched my left. I looked down and gasped at the huge ginger adder uncoiling beside my hand. Her pale yellow head had an imp's face with copper eyes. The touch I had felt was her nose on my hand. She approached again, black tongue flickering. Her eyes burned. The pupils were black and vertical. The tongue was now fully extended, trembling, its tips thin as hairs. At the root it was pink. A slow hiss started. But her head turned away. She was gliding into the heather. My fingers grasped the disappearing tail. It felt warm. I pulled her into the open and stood up shakily as she twisted and bucked, hissing loudly. She was heavy. Her tail tip coiled round my finger. She threw her head at me, mouth open. I staggered and swung her away. Her underside was reddish-grey. She whip-cracked, wrenching her body, then the head came towards me again. I stepped back, nearly falling over. God! Gasped Adrian, coming up behind. I didn't know what to do. The face of a snake, is unmoving. No affection, doubt, surprise, curiosity or fear comes into that countenance. It knows everything it will ever know. The eye, behind a hard, transparent scale, does not move or blink. Adders look wickedly intent. Big, flat eyebrow scales frown towards the nose. The mouth has a long, sad line, or an evil grin, or a glum smile, as if adders hate being adders and want revenge on everything. Adrian held out the coffee jar. I swung the snake towards him. He leapt back, dropping the jar. "Go on, it can't bite while it's dangling." "You reckon?" He put on the glove and again raised the jar. I tried to maneuver the snake. Her snout touched the rim. Feeling support, she began to wind her body round the jar. Aid dropped it again. She corkscrewed. I felt her body stretch. Would the muscles tear? Her head leapt at me again. I swung her away, and her tail went through my fingertips. She flew in an arc towards Adrian, who jumped back. I saw her draped on the heather. Her head moved to point downwards, and she was gone. We did get our adder that day. Phil caught it easily. We were walking beside a high bank. He turned his head, made a quick movement, and a snake was hanging from his fingers as if taken from a shelf. "Got one," he said, matter of fact. Then his smile grew bigger and bigger. The bath was in Adrian's garden. Phil had already said he couldn't keep an adder. His little brother might fiddle with the enclosure, and there were dogs that ran tumbling down the garden. Adrian's sisters were older and always kept away from his reptiles. He had no dogs. But we began to worry. Next door, there was a little girl, a toddler. We imagined the adder getting through the fence. Our unease grew. After a week, Adrian told us he had begun checking on the snake all the time. One day he phoned, panicking. He couldn't find it. We took the terrarium to pieces. The adder wasn't there. Three lizards we had put in for food ran frantically about as we searched. They had seemed unworried by their roommate, and the adder had not eaten since its capture. Feeling scared, we searched Adrian's garden, finding nothing.
"What are you looking for?"
called his mum.
"Oh, nothing."
I went back to the bath. It had to be there. Lifting the lid, I noticed a narrow space between the planks. Wedged there was the adder, tight and drab. "We'll have to take it back," said Adrian.
"Unless one of you can keep it. I can't stop thinking of it getting out and biting someone."
The snake had grown in power. It had forced us to release it. We were quiet as we cycled to the heath. Shaken from the jar, the adder rolled out in a ball. For perhaps a minute, there was no movement. The ball rolled forward. Our adder's snout appeared, and her head. Her tongue flickered. We stared silently. Unknotting herself in one long, fluid movement, she veered to the left, turned back to the right, and continued on into the heather.
Robert Powell was reading from Cold Blood by Richard Kerridge. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4.
Don't miss a thing this summer with BBC Digital Radio.
Proms, and every prom is live on BBC Radio 3. In a few moments, we'll hear Beethoven's Symphony No. 5.
Wickets already. Test match special on BBC 5 Live Sports Extra on your smartphone or on a digital radio. Visitors are being chased 7
nights a week from 10 p.m. However you listen, on your laptop or even digital TV. Join us for the Comedy Club only on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
If you love radio, go digital. To find out more and for coverage in your area, search online for BBC Digital Radio.
This is BBC Radio 4. After the news, Street Dance on Woman's Hour.